Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Garin with my good friend and partner, Arpin Basu. Hello, Arpin. How are you today?
Doing well, man. Yet another day of working on this big feature I'm working on. Tell our listeners that I'm working on my big thing on Caden Gooley after spending a week kind of following him around right before he got traded to the Edmonton Oil Kings. So look out for that. In the coming days. I can't give you a specific day when it'll run, but I'm working on it. It's consuming my entire life right now. And so hopefully something good comes of it and you guys can enjoy reading something good about the Canadiens for a change.
Something positive.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of lack of positives, there's today we're going to focus on injuries. I think because, you know, there's the narrative that the Canadiens are a bad team this year, that they were poorly built and that they suffered from, the Stanley Cup final hangover and whatnot. But when we go past that, there's a real phenomenon going on with the amount of injuries that this team is suffering. And I think that it's relevant that we take a step back and we look at that reality and what it entails for the team, both in terms of actual performances, but also development. And there are many cons to that situation. And I'll also be curious to hear if you think that there are some pros to that situation, if there's some sort of silver lining with having so many guys that are on the shelf right now because of injuries. I mean, the Canadiens have 10, if not 11 regulars that are now out of the lineup. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, I did the quick math today. I have the number at $56.4 million in cap hits, not necessarily salary, but in cap hits that the Canadiens potentially won't have available to them Thursday night against the Blackhawks. That's assuming Christian Dvorak won't be able to play. Dominic Ducharme didn't flat out confirm that, but
no, he did. He's not playing.
Oh, he's not playing.
He's not playing.
I thought he said he needed further tests and that it was possible.
He does, but he's ruled out for tomorrow.
Okay, well then, so with no Christian Dvorak, the Canadiens are short $56.4 million worth of cap hits, including Shea Weber, including Paul Byron, including everyone. The NHL salary cap floor is $60.2 million. So the minimum amount a team is expected to spend or must spend, is obligated to spend, is $60.2 million, which is $3.8 million more than the Canadiens will have out in injuries for Thursday night at least. And the lowest payroll in the NHL is the Buffalo Sabres after trading Jack Eichel, obviously. And they are at $67.4 million. So that comes out to, you know, a little, just, well, basically $11 million more than the Canadiens have out in injuries, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, it's, you know, I think there's some valid criticism that can be made about how this team was built. And frankly, the way it was built didn't allow for unexpected bad news. You know, the team would have had to remain remarkably healthy to have any chance whatsoever of making the playoffs this year. Instead, the exact opposite happened. It really couldn't have been less healthy. You know, obviously, with what happened with Carey Price, you know, just before the season starting, which again should be applauded, but you know, that was a matter of health. It was a matter of mental health, but it's no less important than anyone's physical health. Joel Edmondson getting hurt right off the bat. Mike Hoffman starting missing campus to start. Like, it just started immediately. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's hard not to look at the run to the final last season and maybe see some of that reflected in how guys are reacting physically to this season. I mean, you look at the list of guys out, not all of them were involved in that run. You know, obviously Hoffman wasn't involved, but like Edmondson being hurt, now Toffoli's out, Anderson's out. I mean, all these guys, you know, obviously Shea Weber, you know, how he played through that. I think he was held together by paperclips during the Stanley Cup final, the way it sounds. But, you know, it seems reasonable to think that the short summer, the late end to the Stanley Cup final, how quickly it had to get ramped up again, might have maybe contributed to what we're seeing right now.
That's entirely possible. I mean, it's first, it's a short period of rest. You know, when you have a 5-week summer, it's a very short rest. You have to let your body decompress. And then if you have any sort of injuries, you have to let them heal. And then you have to ramp it up again, but at a certain pace where you're going to go to the gym a certain number of times, and you don't want to push it too hard because obviously you might risk getting injured. There's a curve in the training, in the off-season training. There's a curve that's well known by the trainers and by the conditioning specialists, specifically to avoid, to prevent injuries. So that's something that the Canadiens generally were very good at for quite a long time. So all of a sudden they're faced with a situation that's entirely different because nobody has had such a short off season before. It's unheard of. Plus, we need to mention that the Canadiens also changed their director of sports science and performance. Pierre Allard left, and we got this guy from Team Canada who came in. My God, his name escapes me just now, but anyway, I will find it. And one of the main guys also in terms of training, Patrick Delisle-Houde, also left the organization. So you got the trainers, basically their team remained the same, but there was an overhaul in terms of physical training in the offseason. That supervision was put into somebody else's hands. And in such a short turnover, it's not an ideal circumstances.
No, it's Adam Douglas who took over for as the director of sports science and performance. And there was a lag there that didn't happen immediately. So there was some time in the summer where the Canadiens did not have someone taking care of that. And if there was one summer where they absolutely needed someone taking care of that. It was probably this one. And I think it's somewhat, the theory is somewhat validated. I mean, you look at the Canadiens' opponent Tuesday night, the Tampa Bay Lightning, obviously the first time they played each other since the Stanley Cup final. You know, they have Braden Point is out. Nikita Kucherov is out. Like it's not like, and they're out for a while. You know, I mean, and Kucherov's on LTIR again, where he most enjoys living. And so
he doesn't bother with the regular seasons anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You know, $18 million over the cap, baby. And so, you know, I think there is something to that. I think obviously the Lightning have managed to get over it or get past it far better than the Canadiens have, and you know, you look at the players that were available. You know, there's still Victor Hedman. There's still Ryan McDonough. There's still Andrei Vasilevskiy in net. There's still Sergachev. There's still Stamkos. Still Palat, Cirelli. They still have a lot of good players to make up for it. And the Canadiens, frankly, don't have that. And this is what I've always found interesting about the Canadiens is that they're a team built on depth, but they don't have much of it. Like in the sense that when fully healthy, they have that depth and that allows them to succeed. As soon as they lose, like even let's say a fourth line or a third line player, but as soon as that depth is impacted, they become a far less effective team. Like it's really, so they're at once built on depth while at the same time not having a whole lot of it. It's always been a strange sort of concept for me with the Canadiens. And you look at it. Last night, something struck me early in the hockey game, you know, probably the fourth shift of the hockey game, but it was at around 3:30. So, you know, coaches like to get line 1, 2, 3, 4 out early in the game. And so last night's Canadiens line 4 was what? Laurent Dauphin, to start the game at least, Laurent Dauphin, Cedric Paquette, and Michael Pezzetta. Two guys, definitely, and arguably three guys who maybe belong in the American Hockey League, up against, you know, a pretty good line of Pierre-Édouard Belmar, Pat Maroon, and Corey Perry for Tampa. And that line, the Paquette line, dominated the shift. They spent the entire shift in the offensive zone. They forced them to take an icing. The Canadiens were able to get a good matchup against the Belmar line after that. It just, you know, I watched it and it struck me. I was like, you know, that is what the Canadiens expect from their fourth line, and that's what they've never had. They haven't had basically all season is a line, the depth lines being able to win their matchups, which is really what enabled them to get through the playoffs last year. You know, obviously that stall line with Armia and Perry, but you know, the further down the lineup you went, the more trouble the Canadiens gave their opponents, and so it's I think it's a good formula for a team that lacks superstar talent up front, but it's susceptible to injury. Like it really is, because if you don't have that quality at the bottom of your lineup, then suddenly the top of your lineup's not going to be able to carry that, the changes that come on the bottom of the lineup. So yeah. Interesting. I've always find that an interesting kind of, you know, it's a contradiction in a way that a team's strength is its depth while its weakness is also its lack of depth at the same
time. Yeah, but I think to that, I think that the plan to build a team around depth is there was a clear desire from Marc Bergevin during all his years of signing guys, you know, to fill the bottom of his roster to make sure that they would have enough of that depth. But the issue also, the missing link here, is your young players that you're drafting and developing. They're the ones who, if there is anything, if they're not quite ready, or if you say, you know what, just let them simmer a little bit longer in the American League. Well, if you have those players, let's say, I think that Ryan Poehling this year was a good example. You know, he went back to the American League, and finally, I think that the fruit is ripe. But if you have enough players that are like legitimate NHLers and whatnot, and you hit through a few injuries, you need to have those youngsters in Laval that are ready to contribute right away. And that's what the team has been missing for so many years. You say, okay, well, fine. The cavalry is coming. The youngsters, the next generation, they're on their way. But you look around and basically they're still in college or in juniors, or they've rarely been in Laval. So if you need, if you always have a couple of guys that are in a pinch that are available to say, well, if we need a call up, we know that this guy can be ready. He might not be our top four, top 12 forward when we finish camp and we start the season, but at least we know that if need be, he's going to be ready for the call. And that's something that's been missing for many years. Now, when you have 10, 11 guys that are missing, no matter how you're built, there's no doubt that we're beyond talking about depth. Any team would suffer from that.
Mm-hmm. I was talking more earlier in the season, I think, than now. Obviously, with the list that they have now, no team could withstand that for sure. And even at the beginning of the season, there are more teams now, but you know, for a long time there were very few teams that could withstand losing your number one goalie, especially when your number one goalie is your best player and your highest paid player. So that's also kind of a caveat to the start of the season, but there were a lot of other problems. But I'm glad you brought up development, because the current injury situation, I think, is messing with, or is influencing, I should say, not messing necessarily, but is influencing some of the Canadians' player development decisions. I think everyone can agree that the one positive out of the current situation for the Canadians is that they can use this season to develop some players. I think Nick Suzuki is going to get better over the course of this season. I think we might look back at this season and say that was good for Nick Suzuki to go through that. Jake Evans, same deal. Not necessarily a super young player, but a player that still is in development. Ryan Poehling, you just mentioned, is probably going to benefit from this season, getting, you know, legitimate NHL minutes and performing in those minutes. Not, you know, just how Dominique Ducharme likes to say, not just simply surviving or hanging on by his fingernails, but actually thriving. Alexander Romanov, I feel, has been a great story from the time he sat out a game. He has become a changed player. He's decisive. He's making the right decisions on the ice more often than not. That game against Tampa, when, you know, Bogosian jumped him for nearly kneeing, I forget who the player was, but, you know, he came close to a knee-on-knee hit. It was very close. I understand why Bogosian got so upset. So he goes and beats on him for a bit, and you know, Romanov gets a fighting major out of it, even though he didn't really do a whole lot. But later in the game, you know, there was a Lightning player coming over the blue line, and Romanov did not hesitate. Went right up and hit him hard. And, like, it showed that he's not going to change. And so there's so many aspects of his game that are improving, and it's so important for the Canadians to see that at the NHL level, because you want your young players to develop and thrive, and the injuries are giving guys like Romanov, Poehling, Evans, maybe not Suzuki, but those three guys are getting different roles, different situations, more important usage out of it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Which brings us to Cole Caulfield. I think if you gave Dominique Ducharme some truth serum and asked him if you had enough healthy guys, would Cole Caulfield be in Montreal or would he be in Laval?
Oh, he'd say Laval, no doubt about it.
He would definitely say Laval. And I think that's kind of the unfortunate part about it. I guess it's great that, like, I think most people are like, well, just play Cole Caulfield all you can. That's how you develop him. And I'm not entirely sure it works that way. You know, I mean, when a player is struggling, when a player, you know, I think he's improved over the course of the season, but he's still not nearly as effective as he was during the playoffs last year. And so you'd like to have the option to send the guy down and bring someone else up. And I guess the Canadians could do that if they wanted, like bring up an Alex Belzile and replace, you know, I mean, there's
Jean-Sébastien D or a guy like
that. There's guys in Laval that you could bring up and do that. But I think the Canes feel obligated to try and ice the best lineup they can at this point. And Cole Caulfield definitely falls into that category of a talented, skilled player that you want, that helps that should help the lineup, and hope he kind of figures it out. But you know, same thing kind of applies to Matthias Norlander right now. I mean, with all the injuries on defense, not only in Montreal but in Laval, you know, you have to wonder if their decision on him would be different if they had a full complement of defensemen available right now. And you know, like they pick up Cale Clegg on waivers, and he's instantly on the power play, and he's instantly getting lots of ice time. An unfortunate, you know, bad bounce on the Tampa first goal Tuesday night, but I thought he played pretty well generally, and he's a young guy, and so that could be seen as a positive if you're really stretching for positives. And so but you know, this whole idea that a guy like Norlander, a guy like Caulfield, their development paths are being influenced by factors that are outside the Canadiens' control strikes me as something that if I were the Canadiens, I'd really have to sit down and think about it, like, and really be like, I understand that we need to ice a lineup with 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, and 2 goaltenders, not only in Montreal but also in Laval. But you know, to what extent do we allow that obligation or that requirement to influence our decision making when it comes to player development?
Well, especially at the NHL level, it's when you look at all the changes that were made over the course of the summer. Let's say Suzuki and Caulfield, they were so good in the playoffs last year, in part because the Deno line was creating a great diversion, and we're dealing with the other team's top line, which is not the case anymore. So Suzuki now gets much tougher matchups. He's more exposed. He doesn't have a secondary scoring around him that provides a relief of pressure for his own line. I think that, you know, he's in his third year now, so he's getting a bit more experience. So he manages to stay his head above water on most nights. But I think that it really came to bite Cole Caulfield in the butt, you know, in the sense that he just arrived in the NHL and it was just too big of a bite to chew. So when you add on the injuries to that, then it's not just, okay, where can we put this guy in order to, you know, hide him in the lineup a little bit, or try to find more favorable matchups or shelter him in his usage a little bit. Now it's just, we need whoever is healthy to go out there and play. And so injuries force a sort of baptism by fire, where everybody's, including and first and foremost the young guys who are healthy, more is being asked of them, and it further exposes them to the limitations of where they are in their development. So you were mentioning a guy like Jake Evans. It's ironic because the Canadiens are weak at center, and Jake Evans is a natural centerman, but he's been playing the wing the last couple of games because they're so short on wingers that when you look around and say, well, who could sort of qualify as a top 6 forward among the guys that we have? Well, Jake Evans is one of the remaining guys. He's not a top 6 forwards, but we'll go with what we got. And Dominique Deschamps puts him on the wing. But that, again, it's that same idea of less guys, so we're going to face tougher matchups. And I don't think it's far from a good situation, I think, for the Canadiens to put those youngsters in that situation, because they go out there and they're always at the risk on any given night to be eaten alive. And you're about to go on the road for a couple of games in St. Louis and then in Pittsburgh. And you're going to see it a lot more there, because on the road, it's no wonder that Nick Suzuki struggled to produce on the road, because he's been, even with a healthy lineup, he's already more exposed than he was last year. So now, with so many guys that are banged up, well, it's really not a favorable position for him.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the Jake Evans thing, I think, is a great point, that, you know, you'd like to see him play center all year. And injury, like all of a sudden this team that was flushed with too many wingers, frankly, they have a $3.4 million winger playing on your fourth line, which goes back to the original point of a team built on depth, in Yoel Armia being that player. Now they have so few wingers available that Evans has to play on the wing. I don't want to plug in a network or anything, but on Dave Morissette's show on TVA Sport last night, Andre Tourigny gave him an interview. Now coach of the Arizona Coyotes, a friend of the podcast, appeared on our podcast at some point earlier this year, and was asked about, you know, putting young players, just playing them no matter what, you know. Yeah. and he made a great analogy that I think really applies to the Canadian situation. I think a lot of Canadians fans would probably stand to think about this a little bit when you just sort of blindly say, just play Cole Caulfield as much as possible. He should be on the first power play no matter what. He should be doing everything that they could possibly, every situation they could possibly put him in, they should do that. The analogy he gave was that if your 12-year-old kid decides that he wants to become a doctor, well, you don't just send him to med school at the age of 12. You have to let him go through high school and then get to, in Quebec, Cégep or whatever, but then university and then med school. You take the steps as they come, because if you put him in med school at the age of 12, he's going to fail. He's not going to succeed, and he's not going to become a doctor. So, I think it's a good analogy in the sense that you just have to recognize, and he used the same word, survive. You don't want a player to be just surviving in the NHL. You want them to be thriving. And Dominique Ducharme has said this countless times and gets ripped for it. But I think it's the right way to look at this question is the player just struggling to survive? Because when that happens, your confidence gets affected. You're not developing. There's no development going on. You're starting to lose faith in your own skills. A lot of things are going on that are not good from a player development standpoint. So I do believe he's correct in saying that it's better for a player to go down and thrive and play big minutes and be good and be successful and develop, as opposed to just hanging on by a thread and just sort of, and not being able to do the things that you're accustomed to doing. And this is a question I asked Ryan Poehling recently, and he mentioned the fact that when you are hanging on by a thread in the NHL, you're very aware of it. And yeah, it's hard to think about anything else. Like he said, you try not to think about it, but you just can't not think about it. And it's not only at the rink, it's at home. You're thinking about it constantly. And it's very, very difficult for these young guys to turn that switch off and go home. And oftentimes these young guys don't have families, they don't have kids, they don't have distractions away from the rink. So it really is a big question. And it's the number one question for the Canadians this year is, and it's Jeff Molson identified it as a priority. Jeff Gorton identified it as a priority. And right now these development decisions are being impacted by all these injuries in a pretty negative way.
Yeah. And the injuries make it even more difficult to develop those kids. You know, when you have an interesting number of quality veterans to support these kids, let's say you mentioned Caulfield. I mean, a player's, you know, struggle at the NHL level, either with his confidence or just the fact that his play is not resonating and he doesn't find his game the way that he's usually has it. At least having a sizable number of quality veterans around him can help him in that regard. But when they're all out, you're even more left to your own device. So I totally agree with the analogy regarding the 12-year-old kid going to med school. But at the same time, it's like not only that, but you're going to do those courses online because there won't be any teachers around.
Yeah. So exactly.
What's also an interesting twist is the fact that contrary to the Canadians, the Laval Rocket is in a position where they could potentially participate in the playoffs this year. And that's another part also of development that that's interesting, is that if you can give an experience to your younger players to be, to have prominent roles, even though it's in a lower level, to have a prominent role on the team that's fighting for a playoff spot, that could be good enough to, you know, to go pretty far in the playoffs too, because it can be, the Rocket can be a very good AHL team. I think that's another that's another argument for looking at sending those guys down. But, and I know that we used to argue the other way around earlier in the season, but I think that the way the season is shaped and the amount of injuries that have piled on, it forces us to reconsider a little bit and say, okay, well, is it really what's best for those kids?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Speaking of veterans that helped the kids, you know, one guy who helped Cole Caufield immensely was back at the Bell Center on Tuesday night. Corey Perry scores the game-tying goal with just over 2 minutes left to play, as everyone knew he would. you know, and when Caufield was sent down to Laval earlier this season, Perry reached out to him and gave him some words of encouragement. You know, this was something that he did all year last year. All the young guys really appreciated having Corey Perry around. You know, he was one of those guys that Mark Bergevin always talked about, in the sense that of having, you know, the way he talked about Shea Weber, the way I think, you know, he looked at Corey Perry, Eric Staal, those guys, you know, giving that speech during the Toronto series when they were down 3-1, having Suzuki and others credit that talk for how that series turned around. You know, watching Perry play, and I think I saw some angst from Canadiens fans on Twitter that he's not in Montreal anymore. You know, kind of raised an interesting question in my mind, because there's a chain of events there. The Canadiens did not want to go 2 years on Corey Perry. That seemed quite clear. He winds up signing a 2-year deal with the Lightning. This is actually the second time the Lightning have gotten sort of a role player like person because they were willing to go an extra year. Curtis McElhinney was also basically had a deal done with the Canadiens, and the Lightning swooped in and added an extra year of term to his contract and wound up signing him. Very similar scenario here as well.
They regretted in McElhinney's case, they regretted the second.
They wound up regretting it. Yeah, exactly. And the Canadiens were right to not take it. And frankly, the way things have gone this season, it could be argued that the Canadiens were right again with Corey Perry. Listen, he's great on a winning team. Not much point having a Corey Perry around. You know, I don't think he could have prevented what happened this season. Maybe to some extent early on, or maybe in training camp even, because Canadiens training camp was terrible and they needed some sort of leadership during training camp to tell guys, you know, that they need to get their act together, because the way they prepared for the season leaked right into the start of the season. So maybe that would have been possible. Maybe I have a hard time believing that Corey Perry could have prevented this dumpster fire that we've seen from the Canadiens this season. And if he were here, maybe the second year on that contract would have made him difficult to trade at the deadline. Maybe it would have been tougher, because he's not an impending UFA. He's not a rental. Whereas the guy that the Canadiens got instead of Corey Perry, Mathieu Perrault, if he can string together some good hockey for the next little bit, maybe he can get him a fourth-round pick or a fifth-round pick, something at the deadline, from a team that's looking for a guy who can help out in a pinch on the power play, who can play center, who can play wing, who could do all sorts of things. It could wind up being a plus there. But the notion of having that veteran presence, Corey Perry was – that's what he sold to the Lightning, and also the just how well he played in the final against them. He was one of the Canadiens' best forwards in the final. It's just an interesting debate, and how much value do you put on that, and to what extent do you make cap related and hockey operations related decisions based on someone's ability to sort of, you know, rise the tide, I guess, of some of your younger players and have them feeling good about themselves and performing at a high level?
Yeah, well, it's easy to say now when you look at the way the season has gone, that the Canadiens should have signed him. I think that his absence is really felt off the ice. I mean, when Cole Caufield talked about him yesterday, his eyes lit up. Mm-hmm. We saw him after the game last night. He was chatting with Jake Evans, another younger player who really looked up to him. Yeah. And when you look at the void, the huge void in terms of leadership that this team has suffered, there's nothing that Corey Perry could have done for injuries, but I think that in helping keeping this group in the right mindset, I think that he could have definitely played a role. So it's not as much, I think, on the ice than his leadership that is felt that is missed right now. But when you go back and and the Canadians decided not to sign him for 2 years, I think that when you look at that, calmly, it was probably the right move. But at the same time, for a team that valued character so much, that valued leadership, that had just gone to the Stanley Cup Finals on the heels of A, Carey Price's out-of-this-world performance, and B, everything that intangibles, leadership, and a tight-knit group could bring you, they squeezed that lemon up to the last drop. Mm-hmm. All that idea, that intangibles notions, they went as far as they could with it, and Corey Perry was a big part of that. So you lose all those veterans. They knew that they wouldn't have Shea Weber. That was clear. And they brought, we've had that discussion before, but bringing guys like Hoffman, like Weidman, to a certain extent, Christian Dvorak, who's only been in a losing environment since he arrived in the NHL. There was a void in terms of leadership, in terms of voices that was not filled, and he could have helped in that way. But one thing that I've been told is that apart from the length of the contract, it seems as though that's a thing that I heard, is that Corey Perry was uncomfortable or uneasy with the amount of sanitary measures that were surrounding the Canadians, the whole environment in Canada of how to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact it had on the players. And in that sense, he wanted to spend the next season with his wife who stayed away. They were not together for the whole year. What I've heard is that the pandemic from that, in terms of how Canadian teams and most specifically the Canadians had to react and deal with it, it played a role in him saying, you know what, maybe I should look somewhere else and try to find a different environment. And obviously, when you choose to go to Florida, it's completely different than that.
It's COVID.
Sense.
It's COVID. It's COVID Disneyland. It's like basically like it's the opposite. Yeah. It's the opposite in terms of restrictions and in terms of concerns for preventing the transmission of COVID-19. Yes, so he definitely chose the right. And I think in reality, obviously, he chose them because they had just won. They just beat them in the Stanley Cup Final. They were a very good team. They gave him a chance to win a cup, which is really what he wants. But yeah, if he was looking for a place,
how sad would he be? He's at the tail end of his career. He wants to win another cup. Mm-hmm. And how miserable would he be had he signed with the Canadians and they would be toiling in the, they would be bottom feeders the way they are now with a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
And some sort of rebuild that's lurking in the horizon. He would say, geez, get me out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He would be begging. And that's the thing. That's why I mentioned it wouldn't have been quite that simple to trade him. It would not be all that. It would not be a slam dunk the way some might think, even though he only has 1 year left on his contract and it would have been at a relatively low number. Even though I think he probably would have wanted a little more from Montreal than he got from Tampa, in the sense he got, 2 years at a million per. Maybe would ask for 1.25 from Montreal. I don't know, but it's not an easy contract to just shed. That second year, at his age, a 35 plus contract, it's not something that would have been necessarily easy. So he would have been miserable. The team would have felt maybe to some degree stuck with that contract. So everything worked out in the end for him. Just speaking of, that's a good segue into kind of the final portion of our discussion here, is that, you know, Jeff Gorton's going to be tasked with trying to liquidate some contracts here. And you and I, we were talking before the game last night, and we brought up the possibility or the notion of how tradable Brendan Gallagher might be. You know, 5 more years on his contract after this one, which is obviously in just its first year. The cap hit is significant at, you know, $6.5 million a year. $6.5 million a year for 5 more years. And so I guess our hypothetical, and we thought we'd share it with our listeners, is what happens if the Canadians decide to eat $2.5 million on that 6.5? How healthy would the trade market be to be able to acquire Brendan Gallagher for 5 years at a $4 million cap hit?
Yeah, the length of the contract is the bigger issue, probably even more than the cap hit itself. But there's no doubt that if the Canadians decide to retain some salary, it will make things very palatable, because it's not just that you get more in return for his services, but it's also the fact that you potentially get a larger pool of teams that might be interested in him. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're so close to the situation. You know, sometimes we lack perspective when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens, because we see them every day and all that. But I think that throughout the league, there's still this feeling that even though Brendan Gallagher is banged up, that he's an old 29, I think that you would find a healthy number of teams who would think that he's still, at this point of his career, a healthy gamble, and a guy that if a team thinks that it's one player away, it's the sort of guy that you want to add to your team, because he's a driver, and he's really the sort of guy that will add an X factor that's really going to dynamize your light up a flame.
He drags teams into the fight, is the way to use a hockey cliche. Brendan Gallagher drags you into the fight. He leaves you no choice but to approach the game the way he does. And it's a big influence on teams. And this is where I think the debate becomes interesting for the Canadians, because, you know, I can't be too certain how many teams could, even at $4 million, could fit Brendan Gallagher on their cap. I mean, there's not that many. There'd have to be money coming back the other way, which is fine. Maybe a shorter term contract at roughly the same money could be appealing to the Canadians. But my question is, if you're gonna take a $2.5 million cap hit for 5 more years for nothing, just dead money, is that worth it to lose a guy who has a lot of the same qualities that we just described in Corey Perry? Like, everyone wanted Corey Perry to stay because of his influence on the younger guys and his competitiveness and how he can make sure that that player development aspect goes well. I see Brendan Gallagher as a really similar guy. And, you know, his cap hit might look a little high right now, granted. But when he signed the deal, I didn't really have a problem with it. It was something that,
and I think most of the league didn't have a problem with it either.
Exactly. Like, it was widely recognized that it probably won't age well. Like, towards the end of the contract, yes, that might be an issue, but not the beginning. The beginning was fine. So it's going to be an interesting question, and it strikes me that on a team lacking that element that Corey Perry brought, the one guy who comes closest to bringing it is Brendan Gallagher. And he does it in a different way. It's not the same way as Corey Perry does. But Brendan Gallagher, being as competitive as he is something that I would want around my young players. That's an element of his personality and the way he approaches the game and the way he approaches life, frankly, because he's competitive in everything, is you would want someone like that around. If you're going to start infusing the team with more and more young players, he's a guy I would want to have around, because that part of him will never change. As long as he's physically healthy enough to get on the ice, he will play that way. Like, that's for sure, until he retires. Like, I don't think that's ever going to change with him. And that's a net benefit for your team. When you're doing a cap analysis and you're looking at contracts that need to be shed, yes, maybe his jumps out as being too long for a guy who's, you know, going to be 30 pretty soon, especially the way he plays, which could lead to more and more injuries as time goes on. But by and large, despite his style of play, he's been a relatively durable player considering the way he plays. And he's really been consistent in the way he plays. What's gone down of late has been his goal production. And of late, I mean, in the playoffs last year and this season. He might snap out of that. You never know. Like, the way he played, the way he plays the game doesn't lend itself, generally speaking, to really long slumps. You know, like, because he's a guy who gets goals in the quote unquote dirty areas, instead of a guy who depends on insane amounts of skill to beat guys and zing one timers top corner. He's a guy who conceivably could maintain that style for a while. But it's an interesting one, because I think all those things would make him valuable to other teams as well.
I think that other teams should look at Brendan Gallagher, and they know, I mean, he's got an amazing reputation throughout the league. Everybody wants a Brendan Gallagher on their team, but at this point in his career, they have to look, okay, what has made him a successful contributor at the NHL level? What made him a productive player? What sort of centerman does he need? And do we have that centerman to help him produce? Because the Canadians, I mean, Philippe Danault during the regular season was the ideal centerman for Brendan Gallagher. And I think that now that he's gone, we realize that it was not just Gallagher helping Danault produce. It was also the other way around. You mentioned the playoffs. When came the playoffs, the reality became the same for both of them, is that when you're asked all of a sudden to play more of a shutdown line, and that you're not necessarily expected to score goals, but first and foremost to keep the top guns on the other side off the score sheet, it's going to affect your play, because you're going to start a lot of shifts in the defensive zone. You're going to be there for tough faceoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that Gallagher, despite the fact that he lacked production in the playoffs the last couple of years when the Canadians went there, I think it's a lot more because of his usage, because he remains, in my book, as the style of player that should shine in the playoffs. And I keep thinking that. Now that Danault is gone and we're back to the regular season, it's more like, okay, so who are the remaining sentiment on the Montreal Canadiens, and who is really a fit with him? I think that he's struggled to find the proper fit for him. Between Suzuki, Dvorak, and Evans, it's probably Evans with whom he seems to be the most comfortable. But a team, again, a team that's more competitive, that's got a lesser number of assets to find if they want to be cup contenders, they might have that type of sentiment, that profile that would fit him well, with Gallagher, and enable him. Despite the fact that he's banged up, despite the fact that he seems to be slowing down on the ice too, to help him go back to, you know, the 20-25 goal per season form that you could possibly be able to squeeze out of him for once or twice more in his career.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be understated the extent to which Brendan Gallagher's current season is such a massive anomaly for him. I mean, he has been, you know, just from a, you know, Corsi perspective, like, he's below 50% for the first time in his career as of right now. His lowest before that was 52% in 2014. But he's, you know, he was at 61% almost last season. Expected goals also 61%, 60% the year before that, 57%, now at 45%. You know, just flat out goals for, like, just regular goals for percentage at 5-on-5 was at 71% last year in the regular season, now at 48%, 12 goals for, 13 allowed, which is already more, He's already been on the ice for more 5-on-5 goals against this season than he was all of last season.
That's crazy.
Yeah, which was only 35 games, but still.
Another thing, he scored 4 goals so far this year. Mm-hmm. One of them is 5-on-5, 3 of them on the power play. And in the past, he's never been a power play guy. You look, all the seasons before this year, he, in 187 goals scored, he had 148 even strength and 38 power play. Now he's got 1 even strength and 3 power plays. It's a short sample. It's not a lot of goals. It's not a lot of games. But it shows you also that the trend is different. And I think that to some extent, it's Dominique Duchamp acknowledging that the fit on the top 6 has not been there with any of the 2 centermen. But at least he's been giving him some power play time more than he did before. And it uh-huh. translated to him scoring on proportion more goals on the power play than he did 5-on-5.
Right. But, you know, I think if teams look at his overall track record, you can easily look at this season and see everything that's gone on in Montreal and say, well, he's just a victim of what's going on in Montreal. You know, mm-hmm. he's a victim of Phil Deneau leaving. He's a victim of a lot of things because it is an anomaly when you look at his whole career, just as far as being a play driver is concerned. And you know, maybe Phil Deneau didn't get enough credit for what the role he played in Brendan Gallagher being widely recognized as one of the top play drivers in the league for many years. That'll be something worth considering, but it's one of those cases where all the reasons the Canadians would have to put Brendan Gallagher's name on the market because teams want to get him are also the reasons why they should want to keep him. So it's, you know, there's going to be some tough decisions to be made. And I think Brendan Gallagher kind of exemplifies what Jeff Gorton has on his plate right now in the sense that he doesn't have an attachment to Brendan Gallagher necessarily. He knows him as a player. He knows what he's all about, probably has a great appreciation for what he's done, but there's no emotional attachment to him. There's no emotional attachment to Carey Price, to all sorts of players that were brought in by Mark Bergevin. And I think Brendan Gallagher is an example of the types of decisions that Jeff Gorton and eventually the general manager that they hire will have to make, not only at the trade deadline, but in the offseason. It's going to be very interesting to see how cases like this of players that we thought were for sure going to finish their career in Montreal. Now it might not be so for sure anymore.
And the other thing also is, you know, you say that there are some very good arguments to keep Gallagher in Montreal, and I agree with you on that. But would, depending on the direction that the team goes, would he want to be a part of that?
Well, I think his answer to that question that, I mean, listen, the day Jeff Gorton spoke to us, was it the day Jeff Gorton spoke to us or the day Jeff Molson spoke to us? I think it was the day Jeff Molson spoke to us. They played the Canucks that night, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the day that Jeff Molson spoke about the firings, about Jeff Gorton's arrival, Brendan Gallagher, they played against the Canucks. They lost to the Canucks, who were a bigger mess than they were at that point. And, you know, Brendan Gallagher, I asked him flat out, would you want to be part of a rebuild? And he had to think about it. He admitted he hadn't thought about it until he was asked, but didn't flat out say, I want to stay here no matter what. He said that those are conversations that we would have to have if that's the direction the team wants to go in. Mm-hmm. Jeff Petrie had a very similar answer. You know, I think a lot of guys would probably feel that way. Tyler Toffoli would probably feel that way. Edmondson, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, how miserable would Corey Perry be with another year in his contract in this situation here. I think a lot of the guys who signed here did not sign up for a rebuild. So, and it's not going to be, they're not going to be able to move all of them. That's for sure. Like there's no guarantee. Like, you know, Toffoli's a movable guy with his deal. Edmondson might be as well. I mean, Sherratt's a goner for sure. But I mean, with the way Edmondson played in the playoffs, the teams that miss out on Sherratt might actually be willing to take on Edmondson even with 2 more years on his deal. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
If he hits the market, Edmondson's going to be a coveted player.
I would think so. So yeah. I think the Gallagher situation is really kind of exemplifies what's on their plate right now.
Yeah.
Listen, want to wrap it up there. Want to remind everyone also that if you missed out on our Black Friday deal, which thank you to everyone who did sign up for The Athletic during that time, but you can always get a discount on a subscription to The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/athletic support, which is our podcast page, and there is a discounted rate. It's not quite $1 a month, but it's lower than a regular rate that is available only for Athletic Support listeners. So that's theathletic.com/athletic support. Go to that link, check out the deal, and give us a try.